And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best. And we're so happy to be with you right here today on Progressive Radio Network. We have many broadcasts, and you can find us always at naturalnurse.com. And I want to tell you about some of our up-and-coming classes and workshops that are available for anyone to join in on. Some of them are live, where we take people outside gathering edible and medicinal plants and actually making medicine that you take home. And almost all of our classes have CE credits for health professionals, such as nurses, nurse practitioners, registered dietitians, licensed massage therapists, and acupuncturists. But if you don't need any of those, you can still take our classes, and we have many coming up. You can go to naturalnurse.com, where you can join our mailing list. All we ask for is an email, nothing else. And you can also get to our Facebook, Instagram, etc., just by clicking at naturalnurse.com, the links for those things. And if you go to classes, you will find out how you can join us. Many of the classes are free. Coming right up, we have crystallization patterns. Do you know that in nature, think about a snowflake, there are so many individualized crystallization patterns. And in terms of herbs, each herb has its own signature crystallization pattern. And from studying them, we can see how it affects everything in the human body. So that's a very interesting and sort of obscure topic that not too many people know about. Then we have a 100% free question and answer session about the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course. For instance, maybe you wanted to look into becoming a registered herbalist, that's an RH, or maybe you just want to learn about how to use herbs for yourself and your family, or perhaps you're interested in becoming an herbalist on some other level. What would the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course do for you? So that's a live Q&A. It's on February 12th. And if you register but you can't make it live, then you will have access to the live session to review all about what the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course is. And I would say if you look at pricing of various courses available where you can get various kinds of certificates of completion, that this is extremely cost effective. And I keep it that way personally because I am committed and I have been doing herbal medicine since 1964. Yes, that's with a six. And I've written many, many books about it. And I'd like to spread the knowledge to as many people who are interested in using natural therapeutics and in particular botanical medicine. We also have another free webinar, and this one has credits for nurses as well. It's through New York University Nursing Department, and it is free and open to all nurses and others. And we have the registration link there. That is February 16th, and that's about hemp, THC, CBD, cannabis, and endocannabinoids. What's all the buzz about that? And that is a free class with CE units. Just go to naturalnurse.com and click on events. And then we have the full Natural Nurse Herbal Certification course starting soon, which includes the basics of herbal medicine. Then we have a lot of very exciting on-ground events. We have the 12th Annual Florida Herbal Conference, and we do have a cap of 400 participants at the Florida Herbal Conference. This is the 12th year. I'm so happy to be part of the teaching staff there and all kinds of well-known herbalists. It's also just a fabulous time. We're together for 3 days, first time back in person after all that hoopla that we all went through. And before that, we had it every year. So this is in Lake Wales, Florida, which is a very remote area. And we also have, if you go to naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse, we have a code, which is Natural Nurse, where you can save $50 off the registration for the Florida Herbal Conference. So you can head over to naturalnurse.com events to find the Florida Herbal Conference, which is coming up in March. We also have our trip, which we've had for 30 years, where we actually take participants to the island of Jamaica to sort of live with indigenous healers. And we have deep hikes into the tropical rainforest and swimming, just absolutely beautiful, untouched area. And we learn Caribbean ethnobotany and medicinal herbs, roots, and of course, Itel foods. We travel with Jamaican bush doctors. And this is in March. We've been doing this trip for about 30 years now. And this is our first year back. And that's, of course, an on-ground trip. So we have ongoing classes all the time. Just go to naturalnurse.com, click events, and you'll see all of them and how you can register for any of them on ground, online, the ones that are completely free, and any other events as well. And today we are so happy to have as our guest Jeffrey Smith. And Jeffrey Smith is an international best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, and the leading spokesperson on the health dangers of genetically modified organisms. And you can find him at responsibletechnology.org. Very important link that tells you all about GMOs. His many books, one of Seeds of Deception, and that ignited a movement by exposing the industry and government lies about GMO. Jeffrey has spoken in 45 countries and is the creator of Healing from GMOs and the Roundup Summit and the 90-Day Lifestyle Upgrade. He's the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, which is pioneering a new global effort to protect the microbiome from genetically engineered microbes. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jeffrey.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, I'm not sure if you remember, but this is probably the fourth time you've been on our show over the years, because we've been doing this show since 1987.
Whoa, that's amazing. I've only been an activist in GMO world for 27 years. You've got me beat.
Well, a little bit, but nonetheless, when you came on the scene, we had you. And then I also went to a presentation you did right here in Florida a couple of years back. So I've been a big fan of your work and promoted it heavily for many years, because I think it is so, so important. So going back in time, GMOs were different. I've worked very progressively with the labeling industry, which of course, we don't even have labeling yet, except for those little stickers on things. Why is that?
Well, what we have is a facade labeling program. There was an effort, first of all, the background is that genetically modified organisms, where genes have somehow been changed, either inserted from another species or changed through gene editing and things like that. It was something that the White House thought would promote U.S. trade and dominance in the food sector. So back in the first Bush administration, there was an instruction, an order to promote GMOs to the FDA, EPA, and USDA. And the FDA was told basically to create a position for Monsanto's former attorney, Michael Taylor, to be in charge of policy. They created a new position for him. So his policy was that GMOs didn't need to be labeled. They didn't need to be tested. In fact, companies like Monsanto, who he later became vice president for, could simply put GMOs on the market without even telling the FDA. The FDA did its own research and found that if it had been labeled, it would cause less consumers to buy it and trust it. So they were mandated to promote GMOs, so they did not require labels. Some of the states tried to get labeling, and I was part of the process trying to get ballot initiatives, etc. And there was a huge disinformation campaign where the biotech industry and the food industry spent over $100 million. But the state of Vermont, their state legislature passed a labeling bill, and it was about to go into effect, and the Congress stepped up and passed a bill which we call the DARC Act, denying Americans the right to know, where it basically said the USDA should come up with a labeling plan, and the USDA came up with a labeling plan, and it's a joke. The vast majority of GMO foods are given a waiver. They don't have to be labeled. If you do see a label, they wanted a QR code for some so it could be hidden. That was ruled illegal by courts. Some have a 800 number to find out. And if you do have a label, it'll say bioengineered, which no one knows, because people in the administration know that people don't want to eat GMOs. And so they just changed the name and called it bioengineered. And that means nothing to most people. So although they'll claim we have a labeling bill, and we've joined the 61 countries in the world that do a labeling law, it's really ridiculous. And we look for non-GMO and organic labels if we want to be safe.
And even that, you know, even that, I'm suspicious about some of those as well, because how do we know, even if we have, let's say, an organic certificate, like that little sticky glue that's put on individual pieces of fruits and vegetables, that that's, you know, really been put on in a way that's correct?
Well, there is some fraud in a minor portion of organics. It's being handled first now by the USDA for the first time, but there's a little bit of fraud, and it often comes when you bring organic products from overseas. But it turns out that the organic label is something that requires third-party verification, documentation, and it's usually very accurate. One of the things, though, between GMO, non-GMO label and organic is this. I've been studying the health effects of GMOs and Roundup. Now, why was I looking at Roundup? Well, most genetically modified organisms are engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup herbicide. Monsanto made the Roundup herbicide. Monsanto made the seeds to the crops that could survive the applications.
Right, wait, stop right there, because that's a big thing. I think not everybody knows that. That I actually learned from your book, Genetically Modified Organisms, well, Seeds of Deception, years ago. Of course, now we're going to also be talking about GMO 2.0, which is all over your website that people should visit, responsibletechnology.org. But what you just said is amazing. These seeds were genetically modified to be able to grow under much heavier dosing of Roundup.
Yeah, usually if you put Roundup on a crop field, it'll kill anything that it comes in contact with, including the crops. But you can spray right over the top of soy fields, corn, canola, cottonseed, sugar beets, alfalfa, that are genetically engineered to be, quote, Roundup ready. What it does is it makes weeding easier for the farmers. But Roundup is designed to penetrate into the leaves. It has a surfactant which drives it into the leaves, and it ends up getting accumulated in the food portion. How much does it drive it? Well, we had a very interesting discovery in the recent Roundup trials when Roundup was declared a carcinogen by the World Health Organization. There were some plaintiffs that successfully sued Monsanto for their non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
Wait, I gotta really, you know, shout out that as well, because after years and years of you pointing to a lot of the science that showed the deadly effects, and by the way, it's also called glyphosate, Roundup and glyphosate, both of those words are used in the news, and perhaps people are seeing that many people now have $1 million lawsuits because there was proof that their cancer was linked to the glyphosate or Roundup. And yet it's still widely available in every gardening store. How is
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. And the thing is, it was interesting. I've been also pointing out and catching Monsanto, which is now owned by Bayer, like the aspirin maker. I've been catching them red-handed for years, rigging their research, covering up evidence of serious dangers, burying reports, ghostwriting. I mean, it's absolutely all the nefarious things that you would link to a corporate entity, we actually catch them red-handed and have proof. But there was one thing that came out in this beautiful trial, because they got millions of pages of documents, and one thing I had never heard about, and it was typical Monsanto science. So they had to see how much absorption into human skin occurred when Roundup was in contact with human skin. So they took cadaver skin from a dead person and put Roundup in, and more than 3.3 times the allowable level was absorbed into the cadaver skin. So now the smart evil geniuses of Monsanto kick in, and they decide to take new cadaver skin and bake it in an oven for a long time. And you know how meat gets very, very tough, but that wasn't enough. They then took that tough baked human skin and then froze it. Now they applied Roundup to this leather-like substance formerly known as human skin, and hardly any got absorbed. And that was the level of absorption they reported to the EPA without telling them they had baked and frozen human skin first. So this was a typical
which is going to affect the absorption that they are measuring.
Oh yeah. And so what happens is I know someone that was spraying Roundup by his greenhouse, and it seemed to go through his rubber boots into his skin and came out his urine. And his urine was actually a pesticide, an herbicide. And until he stopped spraying. So what happened is that they spray the Roundup crops with Roundup. It goes into the soy, into the corn and all that, and it ends up in our food. Now, normally I would say for years, I would say avoid Roundup in your food by going non-GMO, so you avoid the two poisons, the GMO itself and the Roundup sprayed on it. But they started promoting Roundup as a desiccant. That means to dry down crops just before harvest. So they spray it on oats, on wheat, on lentils, on mung beans, on beans and grains primarily, but also in the orchards for oranges and the vineyards along the lines.
So Jeffrey, as a desiccant, that's an additional use of glyphosate, which is in addition to crops that are sprayed during growing. Now, are organic foods ever also sprayed with it as a desiccant?
Not intentionally and not legally. However, there's so much Roundup being used in the United States, 300 million pounds a year, that it's actually in the air and in the rain. So if you go to responsibletechnology.org, you can see the database of the foods that have been tested for glyphosate residues, and nearly all of the organic varieties have very little or none, whereas the non-organic varies depending on the crop. So organics are not allowed to be sprayed with Roundup. And here's the interesting point. If you look at a non-GMO project verified oatmeal or loaf of bread, there are no genetically engineered oats. They just don't exist. There's not commercialized. There's no genetically engineered wheat. But oats and wheat are both sprayed often with glyphosate-based herbicides just before harvest. 3 to 5 days is what was recommended by Monsanto. And the amount of glyphosate residues in these non-GMO, non-organic crops is fairly high. And in oats, it's very high. In lentils and mung beans, it's very high. In chickpeas, so hummus has a lot of it. So that's why if you have to choose between non-GMO label or an organic label, we are strongly in favor of the organic label, because that's not allowing GMOs or Roundup. So we recommend going to organic. And I'll tell you, going to organic, it may just sound like an added expense with some theoretical value, but I sent out a survey to 3,256 people who just reported getting better from 28 different conditions when they switched to non-GMO and largely organic food. And these are the major conditions that people are struggling with. In my film that I did with Amy Hart called Secret Ingredients, we talk to and show videos of about 12 people, including kids who used to be diagnosed as autistic. The family switched to organic and they're no longer on the spectrum. Infertile couples with kids, people who had skin conditions, brain fog, overweight, digestive issues, all allergies, all of these things have been shown consistently to be alleviated or eliminated in a large percentage of people who switch to organic. And in the film Secret Ingredients, there are doctors who prescribe organic regularly and say, yes, these are typical results. They're not just one-offs. In fact, what happens is when people switch and their joint pain goes away or their autoimmune disease goes away, and then they cheat or they slide back and start eating the same conventional chemical diet, their symptoms return. And that's the biggest motivator to be more committed to the organic. So I would suggest, if people are not yet convinced to eat organic, go to secretingredientsmovie.com, take a look at it, or get some other information about the dangers of eating organic. And when we published this survey in the International Journal of Human Nutrition and Functional Medicine, and I mean, to give you an example, digestive problems, 85.2% of the people who responded said they improved in digestive problems. And of those, 80% was either significant improvement, nearly gone, or completely recovered. And there's fatigue, overweight, brain fog, anxiety, depression, food allergies and sensitivities. And I'm still above 50% of the people who reported just those.
That's just an amazing amount of information. And I am viewing right now, and I suggest all our listeners do as well, because your website has such a huge amount of information, and you can find it at Responsible Technology, all one word, responsibletechnology.org. And then you have a way people can find that guide, as well as the non-GMO shopping guide, and the glyphosate report, where we see which things are most highly sprayed that have the highest residue of glyphosate. So we're going to take a little break right here. When we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Jeffrey Smith, author of Seeds of Deception and so much more. The website is just an amazing array of information that you can use immediately for yourself and your family to reduce your exposure to this highly toxic chemical, which is promulgated throughout our entire food chain, and also why you would want to do that. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll talk about high blood pressure or hypertension.
Hypertension or high blood pressure is a disease of the Western world and a product of modern civilization. Cultures that continue to adhere to an indigenous lifestyle, which includes low stress levels, a non-refined whole foods diet, as well as vigorous exercise, experience virtually no episodes of essential hypertension. It is very interesting to note that when individuals from these societies emigrate to Western countries and adopt Western habits, they too fall prey to hypertension. Naturopathic treatment of hypertension has not changed essentially in the last century. The mainstay of the treatment still relies on diet, exercise, stress reduction, lifestyle modification, with secondary support from other modalities such as hypotensive phytotherapy or herbal medicine, hydrotherapy, which is the therapeutic use of water, clinical nutrition, as well as homeopathy. We'll focus on phytotherapy in this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest.
Let's talk about Taraxacum officinalis. This is an unpopular nuisance to many homeowners trying to build that perfect lawn. However, this common weed, the dandelion, is a powerful yet safe botanical medicine for the treatment of hypertension. In a Romania study in 1974, the common dandelion was found to be as potent a diuretic as a commonly used drug called Lasix. Dandelion, however, due to its rich levels of potassium, acted against potassium ion depletion, a dangerous condition known as hypokalemia, seen as a side effect of many antihypertensive drugs which promote diuresis. The leaf of the dandelion was a more effective medicine than the root, although the root is utilized by naturopathic physicians and has a powerful liver-specific medicinal quality.
Crataegus oxycantha, also known in the vernacular as hawthorn, is a common tree in the family Rosaceae, or the rose family. Extracts of the plant in the Western literature date back far beyond the Middle Ages. Even the Chinese were privy to its usage, especially as a digestive tonic. The therapeutic principles are found in extracts from the leaves, berry-like fruits, as well as the flowers. In Europe, Crataegus is well respected for its effects at lowering blood pressure, blood lipids, reducing angina attacks, and preventing and perhaps reversing atherosclerotic deposition in arterial walls. This plant has demonstrated a remarkable safety record, but because of its powerful effects, it should not be used with certain cardiac or hypotensive drugs and should be used by a qualified practitioner of alternative medicine.
Other herbs are also helpful for hypotension, such as garlic, olive, and olive oil, and ginkgo biloba.
So if the pressures of life are making your blood boil, don't forget about these herbal medicines the next time you reach into the natural medicine.
Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, thank you so much for joining us. And we're here with our guest today, Jeffrey Smith. And Jeffrey Smith is with responsibletechnology.org. That is the site you want to visit for all the great information that we are talking about here today. He's also an internationally best-selling author. And you have done so much, Jeffrey, actually bringing this information to the public and gathering real science. Why are they perpetuating? You know, it gets to be a pretty dark place to think about why our agriculture is so linked to the use of Roundup and the bioengineered crops.
Well, it's interesting that even though it's still in a lot of foods, there's been only about 12 genetically engineered food crops grown. And this is in sharp contrast to the stated goal of Monsanto executives to their Anderson Consulting, a representative of Arthur Anderson Consulting spoke in a 1999 biotech conference in San Francisco, saying that the biotech executives of Monsanto, their ideal goal was to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds and patent them in 15 to 20 years, and the consulting company designed a strategy and the tactics to approve that, to create that. Another company actually projected a 95% replacement of commercial seeds in just 5 years, which means by 2004. So the fact that it was held to only about 12 crops is a huge victory, not what I was hoping for as an elimination of all of them. But now we have GMO 2.0.
Well, that's a good topic for us to get into. And I think A lot of it is like you're talking about, where they're disguising the use of that word.
Yes. What's happening is genetic engineering has always been described in part by people to make it a shorthand of inserting genes from one species into another. But there's another way of doing it, and that's just taking genes from the same species or just going in there and knocking out genes or changing their structure, etc. So the biotech industry pretended that gene editing, where genes from another species are not introduced, that gene editing was not genetic engineering, and they try to call it, like in the UK, precision breeding, claiming outrageously that it is safe, predictable, and even natural. Unfortunately, they have a very endowed, very well-funded global campaign where they create an echo chamber of voices that are supposedly scientific, but they're often just Monsanto puppets. And they have convinced many governments to fully deregulate gene-edited plants, animals, and microbes. That means that in Brazil, Argentina, India, Japan, United States, and perhaps soon Canada and the UK, and there's forces now working in the EU, you can genetically engineer, using things like CRISPR, any of these plant, animals, or microbes, and release them outdoors without any government restrictions, and in some cases, without telling anyone. Now, because CRISPR, for example, a gene editing tool that's...
Wait, and let's spell that for people, because that's, you know, kind of a new word for some people.
Yeah, it's a CRISPR. And it stands for something that's very, very complicated, but the developer won a Nobel Prize. It's basically a way to genetic engineer very inexpensively, but it's still, just like the original first generation, has massive collateral damage associated with the changes in the genome. So much so that the journal Nature, after analyzing 3 CRISPR studies on human embryos, called it chromosomal mayhem. On our site, if you look at 7 reasons why gene editing is dangerous and unpredictable, it's a 6-minute animated journey into the DNA, you will see 7 different ways that gene editing causes real disruptions and even inheritable problems for generation after generation. Now, in the case when it's used for human gene therapy, scientists are very, very concerned about these side effects. There's a lot of evidence that it happens. It's actually killed people. And they actually pay attention to what happens in their experiments. But when the agriculture biotech people use gene editing, they don't do typically the deep analysis of what actually happens in the genome, and they may be producing crops which have allergens or toxins or carcinogens or anti-nutrients, and there's no requirement to test that, and there's no restriction from putting it in the food supply. And CRISPR is now so cheap and easy, anyone can genetic engineer with a CRISPR lab for about $2,000. And so it's going to be standard equipment in high school biology classes. Home hobbyists are also using it at this point. And the problem is, in the bigger sense, everything with DNA is being targeted. We all have heard of the gold rush of the, you know, the 1849 and all. This is like a gene rush where mosquitoes and other insects, salmon and other fish, grasses and trees, pets, all of them are being targeted or can be targeted soon by these bio-entrepreneurs and well-meaning students and scientists. Now, well-meaning in that they don't necessarily even know about the side effects, because research shows that most people using CRISPR do not evaluate the results and just assume that what they intended happens. And they need to be educated, and it needs to be regulated. So one of the jobs of the nonprofit Institute for Responsible Technology is to try to reverse this deregulation around the world and protect nature, because nature could be replaced in this generation. And so future generations would not inherit the products of the billions of years of evolution, but rather products of laboratory techniques whose number one most common result is surprise side effects, released as organisms that self-propagate and can never be recalled. So we may be foisting our complete arrogance on all future generations. So it's not just like creating 1 or 2 or 3 invasive species, it's replacing an ecosystem with essentially invasive species that have never existed on the planet that can wreak havoc. And we'll talk in a minute about the most dangerous organisms that we can genetically engineer.
Well, that's what you have, an excellent, excellent video. And I highly suggest people go to responsibletechnology.org, where you can see all the work that Jeffrey has been doing these many, many decades. And there's a click about what is GMO 2.0. And that's where you can find also this great video about what we're talking about in terms of microbes. And who knows, the various microbial diseases that the whole planet has experienced lately, how much of that might be linked to playing around with the genes of microbes.
What's interesting is that with all of this talk about whether COVID was origined at a lab or in a wet market, we now know that it could have theoretically been a lab product. And that's all we need to know in order to say it's crazy to genetically engineer potentially pandemic pathogens in laboratories that are known to have errors and mistakes and mishaps. Over 1,000 of them were reported in USA Today years ago. Now, with all these people demanding the end of these so-called gain of function research, I need to insert something that they may not know.
Please do.
When you genetically engineer common, run-of-the-mill, everyday microbes, they can create greater catastrophes than the pandemic pathogens. And I'll give you an example that occurred in the early 90s that most people have no idea ever occurred. There was a set of well-meaning scientists that genetically engineered a common soil bacterium to turn plant matter into alcohol. And the purpose was to distribute it to farmers who, instead of burning their crop residues after harvest, could rake it up, put it into big barrels, mix it with the bacteria, and then 2 weeks later, open the spigot at the bottom, and out comes 34-proof alcohol to run their tractor or sell off farm. And at the bottom, a nutrient-rich sludge that could be used as fertilizer. They were 2 weeks away from releasing this bacteria outside. And fortunately, a graduate student who happened to get permission to study this for his PhD thesis, and this was a bacterium that was approved by the EPA and ready to go, he walked into his lab one Saturday morning, and every tray where he had mixed this bacteria with soil and planted seeds, all the wheat plants were dead. They had been turned to alcohol. It was just slime on the surface. Now, what would have happened if they released the genetically engineered microbe outdoors and it started to spread? And let's say it killed off its natural counterpart, the Klebsiella planticola, which is on the root structure of every plant in all soils all over the world. What if it displaced it and then turned those roots to alcohol? Well, I asked Dr. Elaine Ingham, who is arguably the leading soil biologist in the world, and she happened to have been the advisor, the faculty advisor of this PhD student, and knows all about it. And I said, what could have happened if it was released? Give me a worst case scenario. And she said, it could theoretically end terrestrial plant life on planet Earth. Now, of course, a lot of ifs would have to be checked off. It'd have to survive outdoors, become the dominant species. But we know that we can't recall microbes once they're released. Similarly, there was another genetically engineered bacterium that's also featured in this film called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle, just 16 minutes free of charge at responsibletechnology.org. That could have theoretically altered weather patterns, which take bacteria, which normally create rain and snow and frost, and denude it and make it impotent, so that if it got into the atmosphere and became the dominant strain, it would have changed the way that raindrops and snow was formed. So we're talking about a set of kingdoms, bacteria, viruses, algae, fungi. They actually run the show. They're the micro Jedi army behind the scenes that keep us healthy or make us sick, that allow farmers to have greater crops and nutrient density and sequester carbon. If we mess up the natural functioning of algae, we may starve the Earth of oxygen because it produces 70% of the Earth's oxygen. We may eliminate the ability of the mycorrhizal fungi networks to shuttle nutrients between trees. We may eliminate the ability for mothers to breastfeed or for people to remain healthy. We may eliminate the ability for soil microbes to sequester carbon. And I can go on and on for days, because we actually see the intelligence of nature, the wonder, the majesty of nature. So much of it is run behind the scenes by microbes. It's estimated that humans outsource 90% of our daily metabolic and chemical functions to the microbes living inside us, collectively known as the microbiome, and that we can get away with a measly 23,000 genes less than earthworms in our cells because we use the 3.5 million genes found in our microbiome. We use that in our daily functioning, and that's at risk because when you genetically engineer microbes, they travel and mutate. We all know that now, but we don't know mostly that they can swap genes to other microbes. So if you genetically engineer something for a release in soil, it may end up and in our gut bacteria permanently. It may end up in an infant's gut bacteria, in a desert, in the atmosphere, in a rainforest, in 10,000 different types of microbes, even in completely different classes from bacteria to algae to fungi, changing the nature of nature in ways that is impossible to predict. And we're handing the ability to do that to every high school biology class, every student, anyone that spends money on a CRISPR kit at home. They can all gather up microbes or order them online and make one of hundreds of thousands of changes and release them into the environment. And we're gambling with the nature of nature. And this is what we want to do at responsibletechnology.org is to lock down genetically engineered microbes to protect this and future generations. And we're looking for support for just that purpose.
And it's so important because they went ahead with their plans, you know, and wrecked a lot of havoc already, even with the first generation of GMOs. And this one seems so much more problematic. Well, we're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so people can hear more about Progressive Radio Network, which hosts our show. And when we come back, we will continue this fascinating discussion with Jeffrey Smith and find out more yourself at responsibletechnology.org. You can always find us at naturalnurse.com. And we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So happy to have our illustrious guest, Jeffrey Smith. And you can find out more at responsibletechnology.org. Jeffrey, you've been telling us the backstory about genetically modified organisms. Now, is it helping at all because of the big lawsuits that people are winning, which has certainly gotten a lot more news about the association between the use of these pesticides and herbicides associated with GMOs and cancer?
You know, there was a tremendous amount of TV commercials by law firms looking for plaintiffs to add to the numbers of their class, not class action, but mass tort, to sue Bayer, Monsanto, for the cancers of people with non-Hodgkin lymphoma who had used Roundup. And it was all about, did you use Roundup and do you have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? And if so, contact us because you may be making lots of money if you do. Now, the association was using Roundup and getting cancer. It wasn't eating food. There's not a deep understanding of a lot of people that Roundup and glyphosate residues are found in food. And that is still something we need to express, but because so many people are aware of the cancer promoting qualities of Roundup now, we simply have to say Roundup is sprayed on food crops and it's found in your food. Now people get alarmed. So there's more receptivity, but it's not as powerful a message as simply stop using Roundup to spray. And a lot of schools have stopped allowing Roundup to be sprayed on the lawns, and some city councils and county councils are doing the same. Now, what's interesting is in our website, we have a section on pets. Dogs rarely had cancer in the past. Now they're the mammal with the highest cancer rate. It's expected that one out of every 1.6 dogs has cancer or will get cancer. And we think it's the glyphosate residues in the dog food and the Roundup sprayed on parks and in areas where the dogs walk. And when we talk to veterinarians who take their animals off of Roundup sprayed food and put them on organic diets, I talked to one doctor, Barbara Royal, who's Oprah's vet. She said that 80 to 90% of her patients' problems are managed or completely resolved just by switching the diet. I talked to one doctor who wrote a column that was read by 25 to 30 million people, The Animal Doctor by Dr. Michael Fox. And he said that when GMOs were introduced into the human food supply, it de facto was introduced into the pet food supply, which takes the remnants of the human food and puts it into the dog food and pet and cat food. And he was flooded with letters by unknowing pet owners who said that their dogs or cats now had diarrhea or itching or a number of other things. He wrote back to them individually and said, get them off of the GMOs. And he has a locker full of letters confirming that the problem went away. But it's not just the animals. I talked to pediatricians like Dr. Michelle Perro, who wrote the book, What's Making Our Children Sick? Because she learned about GMOs and Roundup actually from me, and then started studying it and realized that the complications in her young patients starting in early 2000 couldn't be explained by anything that she was seeing. And she started to put her children and the whole family on organic diets. And lo and behold, these complicated, horrible diseases and disorders started to resolve. And not just for her patient, but for the whole family. So her autistic patient might get better, but his sister, her ADHD might get completely fixed. And the father with a kidney disease might get better. And the mother who was overweight. And it turns out, if you look at the epidemiological charts in the US for all these different diseases, many of them are rising in parallel with the increased use of GMOs and Roundup. And I mean, like, in some cases, hand in glove. Now, correlation doesn't prove causation, but we understand now modes of action. So insomnia, for example, many people are having insomnia at a rate that's increasing with the use of Roundup on GMOs in the United States. Well, when you spray Roundup and it gets into our body, it shuts down something called the shikimate pathway in our gut bacteria. So that doesn't produce the L-tryptophan, which is a precursor to serotonin, which is a precursor to melatonin, which helps us fall asleep. So we understand, we can connect the dots, but we can also connect the dots to the dramatic parallels with inflammatory bowel disease, obesity, anxiety, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, high blood pressure, autism, celiac disease, kidney injury, cancers of all types, including breast cancer and leukemia, intestinal infection, peritonitis, hepatitis, dementia, ADHD, schizophrenia, birth defects, etc. All of these are highly correlated with the increased use of GMOs and Roundup. And it's no wonder, because humans eat more in America, they eat more than their weight of GMOs each year. And then on top of that, Roundup sprayed on the GMOs and in other products, and they combined to create absolutely horrible conditions. You can see them in the rat studies, where it's multiple massive tumors, early death, organ damage, smaller brains, livers, and testicles, potentially precancerous cell growth, all sorts of things in the animal feeding studies, which I think are unfolding in our population. So first order of business, switch to organic. And when you do it, get a little spreadsheet. Every column is a new day. At the top, the percentage of organic that day, your mood, your energy level, and 1 to 10, all of your symptoms. And you may do it in order to lose weight, but you might find that your acne, your eczema clears up. You may do it for reducing brain fog, but you might find that your symptoms for something else clears up. And you will have your own data, and you'll be able to share it with others.
Yeah, that's an amazing array of things that can be helped by moving to, like you said, a good easy step really is going with more organic food or grow your own or find. I always like local farmers that I can just go speak to. They are growing organic food, but they're not always organic certified because that costs a fortune. So if you're a little farm, small grower, and you're growing just without the use of all those chemicals and glyphosate, you can state that without being USDA organic certified. So they have to charge more, though, because it does cost them more to grow because they're a small operation. So there's ways to certainly do that. And that's wonderful information. So tell us more about how people can get involved with your organization, Institute for Responsible Technology.
At responsibletechnology.org, I'd like to recommend three things. First of all, immediately sign up for a newsletter because staying informed in this is really important for your health, but also for the health of the planet. I'd also like to recommend that people donate not only on a one-time basis, but if possible, on a monthly basis, any amount, $5, $10. Then we know we can rely on that amount of money coming each month, and then we can hire the staff we need, open offices around the world. We're trying to respond to the President Biden executive order to promote biotech, and we need to have some major projects happen this year. And our eyes are bigger than our bellies, meaning that our plans are bigger than our current budget, so we need to support that. So sign up to become a member to receive our newsletter and information. Please make a donation and then spend some time on there. The easiest way is there's two videos. There's a 16-minute video called Don't Let the Gene Out of the Bottle. It won a Telly Award. It's about the microbial problems, and you'll see about that, the ones that may have caused a cataclysm. And then there's a 6-minute one called Seven Reasons Why Gene Editing is Dangerous and Unpredictable. That goes into the science, but it does it in a nice animation so you see what's happening. You'll know more than the regulators and lawmakers around the world who've been duped by Monsanto Bayer into deregulating it. And spend some time looking at stuff. If you have kids, look at how to shop. If you have dogs and cats, look at that section and bookmark it and come back, and you can join our Facebook community and our other social media communities. So I'd like to invite you all to be part of that community. And then you can also go to livehealthybewell.com. And there I have my film, Secret Ingredients, a 90-day lifestyle upgrade to help people switch to organic, a healing from GMOs and Roundup Summit, and an inspirational program called A Magnificent New Normal. So all of those are available at livehealthybewell.com.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today, Jeffrey Smith, and for all your dedicated work to increasing the health of the planet as well as individuals. And you've been doing that so many decades. And I would say you've made some significant inroads, although I'm sure it's frustrating at times when we look at the regulatory environment.
It's been very actually beautiful to meet people who say, you've saved my life or you saved my family. And I see that, you know, when you compare, we started this in the beginning, they wanted to genetically engineer 100% of all commercial seeds in the world and patent them. And I was starting out at a time when no one knew what a GMO was and no other nonprofit wanted to talk about the health dangers. And we built a movement around it. I spoke in 45 countries, trained 1,500 speakers, organized tens of thousands of activists, and built a movement. Now we just have to do it again and build a movement to protect the microbiome.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today.
And my pleasure, Ellen. It's good to check in from time to time with you.
And thank you, listeners, for once again joining us right here on Progressive Radio Network for The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, and you can visit us, send a comment at naturalnurse.com. And until next time, I hope that you stay healthy.